Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. The story you're about to enjoy is a factual tale, read to you from a fictional location. We believe.
Mr. Darling, before our guests arrive, I want to talk to you about Mavis Mash. There's a hex on her.
Oh, what hex did you put on her?
Oh, you are sweet, but it wasn't me. I can detect it, though. It's a mushroom curse.
Oh, no. Does she?
Yes, I'm afraid so. She probably stole some mushrooms from someone's property, and now, somewhere on her person, she grows mushrooms. Poor doll. She's so lonely.
And you're going to remove the curse. Madam, how kind.
A, I'm not that nice. B, are you drunk? And C, where's the fun in that? No, I want to fix her up with Dr. Boyle. Lance Boyle, the dermatologist.
Oh, dear.
Now listen. During tonight's reading, I want you to take this red ribbon and tie one end to each of their chair legs.
Madam, that's preposterous. I'll get in position.
Thank you all for coming. Welcome to the Midnight Library, everyone. I'm luckily your librarian and happily your host, Miranda Merrick. Our quaint little village is and has been a very happy home to many of us for many years, has it not? Most of us are fortunate enough to have rented or owned our own private plot of land, or to have had a home or spot of land bequeathed to us from generations past. Several of you have been born and raised and continue to dwell in the lush countryside, having been the offspring of farmers and gamesmen and foresters that have and still provide produce, livestock, game, and lumber to our content wee village. Enchanting gardens that grace almost every homestead can be seen easily from overhead. I've been told... It's all so beautiful and bountiful, it's almost as though there were unseen forces at work. Ancient forces that have infused our community with some sort of rich ideal, or a law of abundance of some sort. A kind of ancient pact or union or wedlock between the very spirit of the land and we the people who dwell upon it. Tonight, I shall introduce you to the sacred entity who just may be the reason for all of this bounty we rely upon. I want to share with you the deep and mysterious legend of the Green Man. You've seen him, you must have. If not high on a precipice of one of our town's charming old buildings, then perhaps occupying a vine-covered garden wall. The travelers among you may have seen him engraved in church architecture, and readers will have seen him adorning the pages of books with both an historic and fantasy theme. If it were daylight here and Mr. Darling was feeling socially affable, he could safely escort you to see our own green man, Emerald Jim, in our little grotto. It's a bit overgrown with strangleweed, but we don't spend much time there in daylight. An archaic symbol of both humanity and nature, the image of the Green Man strangely portrays the two fused as one. Generally a most striking stone-carved figure of a strong-featured man's face emerging from a bed of dense leaves and vines, which are sometimes part of his countenance, as the foliage creeps symmetrically from his mouth, or almost imperceptibly substitutes his beard and brows. Showing only his face, he's the embodiment of mythos and power. His origin steeped in the misty history of so many cultures, I'm afraid I can't tell you where he first appeared for certain. Some of the possible images of him in stone are now so weathered and time-worn that they cannot be verifiably said to actually be him for sure, and some reliefs of him have undoubtedly been eroded, destroyed, and sadly lost to time. What may be most likely is that he is the graven image of gods from ancient times, pagan gods that were linked to fertility and spring, such as the Greek gods Dionysus and Pan, and the Celtic god Cernunnos, a great horned deity whose name has come to be used as a blanket term to reference many such old world spirits of natural divinity. Their image is a personification of the very spirit of nature. It is even thought that the green man may be the counterpart to the female Gaia, the spirit goddess of Mother Earth, so that in the pairing of them, the fertile earth will maintain a resilient life force and burst forth with budding new life each spring. Ancient peoples having created a beautiful love myth, complete with male and female manifestations to explain the seasonal life cycles they've witnessed since time immemorial. Another fascinating aspect about the Green Man is the fact that he's been welcomed. His likely pagan presence, although unusual to say the least, has just been routinely accepted. Many churches across Europe still have well-preserved images of the Green Man carved into their structures, some of them right alongside of graven images and statues of Christ and various saints. This is often seen as pre-Christian symbolism being steadfastly valued and incorporated into the portrayal of the emerging Christian faith. Quite forward-thinking for the time period, I do believe. Or perhaps just stubbornness and good old-fashioned obstinance. And it may be a surprise for some to hear that tree-hugging is not a modern life philosophy in any way, because there is substantial evidence that fans of the Green Man had the philosophy long, long ago. From prehistory into medieval times, much of the Western European countries and the British Isles were blanketed in dense, mature forests. Naturally, these dark, unexplored woodlands seem to have a mood and spirit to the pagan people attempting to take root at their perimeter and try to live off the land. So they began to think of them as sacred groves, to be revered and respected and cherished. They saw themselves as servants of nature and protectors of the trees. They began shaping the landscape, careful of what they cleared and took for their own benefit, and believed it was wise to plant and cultivate trees that held for them spiritual meaning. To this day, some of the yew trees found across these lands are the ancestral offspring of the very trees planted by the early settlements of these people. The yew trees being both a symbol of death and life. Death, because it was thought that the tree, while sending roots down from its branches that touched the ground, was in contact with the decaying dead buried below, and life, because this same ability to be able to regenerate new life from itself and multiply with new growth in this same manner. So, it is thought that tree worship in these areas may have brought forth the first images of the Green Man as an entity. This way of thinking, This belief in woodland spirits by these people was handed down and traveled through the bloodlines of their progeny. As knowledge grew and the people flourished, this idea was brought forth in images and characters called by various names and then recalled in song and verse and celebrated in strange and lavish festivals that, believe it or not, can be seen in all of their glory and madness still today. A few of these folklore earth god divinities personified are the Green Knight, an Arthurian character from the 14th century poem of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. He is portrayed as an enigmatic warrior, almost certainly immortal and possibly representing Christ or even Satan. And he is, of course, green from head to toe. Another full-length Green Man character from early Eastern European culture is Woodwose, the wild man of the woods. This being is thought to be emergent from the untamed landscape itself. An impressive persona, often depicted nude, with foliage intertwined in his unkempt hair and beard, and wielding a large wooden club. He is the representation of free, rugged individualism, anchored in nature, a reminder of the less civilized origin of man. John Barleycorn, Green George, and Jack and the Green were and are three more verdant men celebrated in English and European countries. They are even today seen bedecked in their greenery, suiting their characters portraying harbingers of spring. They dance with great revelry and parade through the streets covered in leaves and vines and even sprigs of wheat to usher in the hopeful bounty of spring growth, the rebirth of greenery to the winter-ravaged landscape, and the turning of barley and wheat into beer and bread. The more gregarious and cheerful their dance, the more plentiful the harvest will be. Of course, another enticing aspect of the depiction of the green men is that of them as kings. They are bold, often enchanting-looking beings with robust physiques and chiseled, handsome faces, their heads encircled with crowns of distinctive leaves and sprouts, vines and twigs, and even acorns and berries. The various ingredients in their crowns signaling the seasonal equinoxes they proudly represent. The Oak King, with his vines, buds, and acorns, ruling spring into summer. The Holly King, crowned with pine sprigs, holly berries, and fall foliage, the escort of autumn into winter. Each ascending and descending the throne, alternating in turn their botanical rule over the kingdom that is the ever-changing earth. One of the most profound things about the image of the green man lies in his ambiguity, his origin being so hazy and diversified. Some of the earliest images thought to be him have been found in India and Asia Minor, then later carried into Europe. Then there are the subtle but impactful variations in his different likenesses. The engravings of him with foliage in his mouth, for instance. Some cultures see him as a destructive force, one devouring nature and destroying life. To them, he represents death. In images almost exactly the same, with leaves or vines in and around his mouth, he is seen undoubtedly as a giving symbol of growth, prosperity, and life. Still to others, the vision of the vegetation located in his mouth is somehow both. It's a reminder of life and death, resurrection and rebirth, the natural cycle of all living things. There even exist depictions of the green man as a bare skull, with delicate shoots and vines and tendrils of flora sprouting from his empty eye sockets. A sure message to all that, even in death, there is a source for new life. There is also a minor variation that I do believe is at least worth mentioning, although it is admittedly of an indeterminate nature. There is yet another representation of the famous Green Man, not unlike our Emerald Jim, and that is one of him with horns growing from his crop-covered head. This is apparently due to the fact that in some cultures, he is meant to reflect an evil presence, being a demon or devil, a counterforce to all who would attempt to control or subdue him with their rules and standards of goodness. Anyway, in the case of our Emerald Jim, there was just a conflict in the instructions for the Midnight Library builders. Grandma Morgan wanted a bull deity, and Grandma Morticia wanted a green man, so Nicodemus, the builder, combined the two. I read that somewhere in the blue diagram print notes thing. Well, my dear guests, that's our story for this evening. We thank you for visiting us here on the grounds of the Midnight Library. Oh, and we promise to look for anyone who may have, in the past, become lost on the grounds, and we'll report back to you if we ever find anything worth reporting. Now, please allow Mr. Darling to show you safely to the information desk on your way out. We have gathered some amazing materials regarding tonight's subject. I'm sorry there are no photos of our Emerald Jim. Cameras never seem to function inside the grotto. Good night.
Well, charming greeting, madam. I'm off to my study. Tons of obituaries to practice. Good night.
You get your tail back here. Nice try.
Well, I did try to do as you asked, madam. I crawled under the chairs and tied the red ribbon from Miss Mash's chair to Dr. Boyle's chair. But then Dr. Boyle exchanged chairs with another gentleman. You know, I do believe he wanted to move closer to gaze at you, madam. He's obviously taken...
Stop it. With whom did Dr. Boyle exchange chairs? Tell me.
Another respectable businessman, madam. Not to worry. I'm sure he'll make just as good a match for Miss Mash.
Out with it.
Paolo.
Papa Paolo?
Yes.
From the Magic Mushroom Pizza Parlor?
Yes.
I don't know what to do.
Might I suggest a cessation of all pizza orders for the foreseeable future?
Absolutely. Done.
The Midnight Library is co-produced by Tess Feifel and Astonishing Legends Productions and is edited by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell with music and sound design by Ryan McCullough. Special thanks to Miranda Merrick and Mr. Darling. No part of the show may be reproduced in any manner without express written consent. Copyright Astonishing Legends, all rights reserved.